Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
Hey, welcome to the 25th episode of
Foment About It
on heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're hosting this show of all things fermentable, focusing on homebrew. We're back tonight with a table beer episode. So extreme beers, but not the extreme beer high alcohol that you might have thought of when I originally said that, but small, tiny alcohol beers.
I'm calling this the Big Little. This is the episode of the Big Little.
Less than 3%.
Little beer, big beer.
So we've got a couple guests, but we have a few announcements first.
Well, okay. I have unofficially decided to declare that next week is Mead Week in New York City. So starting on Friday till the following Sunday, we're just going to celebrate the fact that we can actually get some mead here in New York City. What is mead? Mead is a fermented honey wine, and it's really...
Fermented honey beverage.
Fermented honey beverage. Yes, beverage. Alcoholic beverage, fermented honey that is delicious and has many, many different, comes in many different forms. But a lot of people don't think about it. People don't drink it. It is hard to come by, but it does exist here in New York. So next week, check things out, nycmeadweek.org. And yeah, what you got, Mary?
Okay, I've got the Homebrewed Mic number one is at Comedy Bar NYC in Chelsea on this Saturday, May 18th from 6 to 7:30. So this is the first one that they've done. It's a free monthly event, and it's combining homebrewed beer and homebrewed comedy. So they have comics including Sam Morrill, Emmy Blatnick, Jared Fried, Nick Carber, and more. And they're going to have music by Final Gravity. Doors at 5:30, seating at 5:45, and show at 6. So they're going to be combining stand-up comedy with homebrew taste. The whole thing is free, and it should be a really good time. So again, that's at Comedy Bar NYC in Chelsea on Saturday the 18th at 6 p.m.
And certain homebrews are hilarious. Wouldn't you agree? Cricket. Anyway, today we have some really great guests, some old friends, and a repeat offender here, Kyler Surface. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I'm doing good. And Jamie Stafferdale.
I'm doing good, too. How you doing?
How you doing? So I know Jamie from the New York City Homebrewers Guild. I've been a longtime member and a really incredible brewer and makes some really big flavored low alcohol beers. Like that mild that you had the other day.
That mild, yeah. That was, I'm not sure it exactly fits in the rubric of the show. It's actually 4.4%.
Route row.
But I do have one that's 2.7, so.
Awesome.
You've been on a roll with us. You've been every guild meeting in the past like few months. You've been bringing like these low alcohol beers, which have been really delicious.
Yeah, I've been brewing them like pretty much one a month since my brewing season started in October.
This is kind of like not really instinctive for a lot of home brewers. Like we don't always home brew for. I mean, we like alcohol. Why are you brewing 2% beers?
I don't know, it's possible I don't love alcohol as much as some people, but it's also true that since I started kegging, I noticed that I didn't drink my beer as fast as I wanted to brew it. So mm-hmm. It seemed like brewing lower alcohol beers, I could drink more, move the keg along faster, brew more, it all worked out. And it's also kind of a nice challenge to try to make something that's big flavored and really like with low alcohol. Because, you know, you have less malt work to work with, less hops, and it's sort of just a better... You know, it's an interesting challenge to try to get a good beer out of that.
Let's talk about that. Less malt, less hops to make a low alcohol beer that's still considered beer. What, how much are you decreasing and how does it affect, how do both of those correlate? I mean, do you really use a lot less hops or?
I mean, obviously, it depends on the style you're doing. So, you know, if you're doing like a hop forward, you know, American bitter, you're going to use more hops than in a, you know, I've been making a couple like Belgian table mild type of sort of not really a style, I don't think, that I've had anyway. And, you know, in those, you want the yeast to shine through. So, you know, you're going to use maybe an ounce, maybe, you know, two. But, you know, as far as the grain bill goes, you know, I do five gallon batches. And when you decrease the amount of malt you're putting in, you also seem to get higher efficiency. So, like, I can, you know, I've been making some beers with, like, you know, 6 pounds of grain, 5.5 pounds of grain.
Five gallon batches,
yeah.
What'd you guys say, May?
All right! I'm so excited. I've been wanting to do a table beer episode since we started this show because I love session beers and, you know, being able to drink something that's 2.5%. You can have, like, I can come home from work, have, like, 2 pints, 3 pints, and keep working.
But if you have 2 pints of the beers that you make on the size that you make them, what's the percentage of beer that you will have left on the batches that you're making?
So what Chris is referring to is that recently I've gotten on this 1 gallon batch of beer making. So I made the beer that we're gonna pour. That I'm gonna pour in a second. My first table beer, official table beer, and we're loosely defining table beers as under 3% ABV. So anything 2.9% ABV or under can be considered a table beer. I guess it would have to have malt in it. There could be an official definition, but that's my definition. So it should have some kind of malt in it. Anyway, so Friday night I came home and I made this beer that is now finished, and we racked it.
Wait, Friday night?
Yeah.
Friday night. What day is it today?
Like 3 days ago?
Day!
Like
Friday night?
How many hours ago?
It's like a 60-hour beer. It's awesome.
Wow.
Maybe a little over that. So I finished around midnight. I think I racked it in the container at midnight. I just made a gallon using a brew-in-a-bag method. The thing is, it's really easy. There's no time commitment. I mean, you cut time on every step. It takes like 4 minutes to chill it. It takes 1 minute to get the mash out temp. It's ridiculous. And it's no maintenance. I mean, I get a strike. I stick my 2 pounds of grain in and then stick it in the oven and leave it. You know, you don't have to tend to it at all. It just does its thing.
You don't have to be sanitary at all.
Yes, you have to be sanitary. You have to, of course. But, you know, you don't have to constantly watch. There's not going to be a boil over. I mean, it's not in the pot that I'm using. So all those things, I don't know. It's very easy. And then I made another gallon, actually a Grätzer, on Saturday morning, which I did not bring. But anyway.
So if you make a smaller beer, it generally is going to take less time to ferment out. Is that the case for all the way around?
Pretty much.
I know these answers, but I should say.
actually, maybe contrary to... Well, you would think the beer that I guess maybe I'm here for was a Scottish 60 shilling that you guys tried. And
it's delicious.
Thank you. I did a little bit of research on it, and a lot of things follows what Jamie said, you're not using very much malt. What I found was that you have to be careful in your mash tun, since you have so little amount of grains. You have to be careful of your temperatures because there's not a big thermal mass. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about fermentation. I actually let mine ferment for 2 weeks straight because that was kind of a classic profile for Scottish ales, was a real cool fermentation around 60 or 62. So I just chucked it in my basement and just didn't touch it for 2 weeks. And it came out really nice with very few esters, but it was just a classic American ale yeast, the US05. So it probably would have been done, you know, in a week, and it probably was done in a week because it started around 10:30s. But I let it go for, you know, 2 weeks.
Do you think if you had a stronger Scotch ale that it would have been done in 2 weeks as well? Or you think maybe it would have been a little bit more time if you had more fermentable sugars?
I think technically it would have been done. I don't think it would have been good at 2 weeks. You know, it would be probably finished fermenting. But I tend to, just because I'm so busy lately with a few things, I just got a little... A little baby.
A little wee one.
So I just leave my stuff in the carboys for sometimes months at a time until they really need to be ready for, you know, shows like this or a competition or something like that. So I'm a little bit laid back about it until, you know, it needs to happen.
And why did you brew your Scotch ale so long?
Along with what Jamie was saying was I kind of just wanted a challenge. I... you don't see a lot of commercial examples of under 3% beers, so that's enough reason for me to attempt something. That's one of my favorite styles is English bitter, which you don't see at all. That doesn't technically fit the table beer definition, but the Scottish 60 shilling, I'd never seen that before. You see Irish red ales every once in a while, Scottish wee heavies and stuff, but and I read a few articles about it and stuff. I thought I'd give it a shot, and it was awesome and came out great. And the sad thing was it's so drinkable that you go through it so fast. So I wish I had brewed, 10 gallons of it or something.
What yeast strain did you use for Scotch Ale?
So I used the Chico strain.
You did?
The 1056 001 White Labs. But I actually just used the dry yeast. One thing you have to be careful of, I didn't find this out, but other people have found this out, is that you don't need to pitch the whole packet. You only need a small amount of it. And Mr. Malty, the pitching rate calculator, is what I used to figure out how much it was. It was something minuscule, like 6 grams of rehydrated yeast, which is very little, or something like that. But so yeah, it's a nice clean fermenter, gets out of the way, so the malt, really only the malt, can shine through, because that's pretty much, there's just a little bit of hops and a lot of malt in it.
I love that beer.
I gotta
have sweet memories of it.
So yeah, tell us about the malt bill that you used in that.
So I believe that it was approximately 89%, close to 90% Golden Promise, which is one of my favorite malts. I used to use that a lot in my IPAs, just because I love the kind of neutral but biscuity flavor. It's not as biscuity as Maris Otter, which I think the beer would have been great with Maris Otter, and that's where a lot of resources that I found said to use Maris Otter, because it's kind of a classic malt for this style. But so it was about 90% Golden Promise. I want to say 4% Crystal 60, 4% Crystal 120, and then like 2% chocolate, or roast barley, excuse me. And then like 15 IBUs of East Kent Goldings. So pretty simple, pretty straightforward. Pretty high mash temperature. I think I mashed at like 156. You got to leave behind a lot of residual sugar. It's kind of a lot of crystal malt, but you kind of need... something. You don't have alcohol, you don't have a lot of malt backing up the flavor, so you have to find flavor somewhere.
Yeah, and that gives it a little more body too.
Yeah, definitely. So,
I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. So what are you pouring now?
So this is the Pennsylvania Swanky. So Chris and I are planning a Kentucky Common for the 508 Pillow Talk series. And so we were somewhere, and I grabbed Randy Mosher's book, Radical Brewing, which is one of my favorite homebrew book in the world. And so I was looking at the Kentucky Common section. Now, keep in mind, this is like less than 3 days old. Anyway, they had this beer called Pennsylvania Swanky, which is like an extinct beer that was brewed in the Pennsylvania area. So I Googled it. He kind of has some pointers, but basically it was a low alcohol brown ale that was brewed with, he says, aniseed and star anise. Now others just have aniseed, but I used aniseed and star anise. And they actually, Randy explains that they actually would start it at like 1027, 1029 and then stop it and basically serve it early so that it would still retain some residual sugar.
He'll stop it at 1020.
Yeah.
So you go from 1029 to 1020, right?
Yeah, to 1020. I did not do that. I ended up with this is my first 1 gallon batch in my little brew in a bag system. So I ended up with 1022 OG. And then I pitched Safe Ale 04, and I just pitched part of a packet. I didn't do a calculator. I didn't rehydrate it either. I just, dumped it in there. And then when I took the gravity reading this afternoon, it was 10:03. So.
Interesting. It's very dry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's good. So there's star anise, and what else?
And aniseed.
Mm-hmm. We get like a little bit in the aroma, but not much in the flavor.
I think I could add more.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's 100% Valley malt. So it's the Valley Turo and the Valley chocolate malt.
Mm.
And that's it.
I think it's delicious.
It
reminds me of a. I think the first two words that came to my head were baby pilsner. But it's very dry, and it seems hoppy to me. Maybe that's the
Well, let me,
anise
I gotta
or
look at my yeah. I think you. I mean, I definitely am getting a sense from the anise,
mm-hmm. some sort of bitterness. But it's, yeah, it's, I think. You
I mean, it was described as like a root beer, basically a slightly alcoholic root beer. So I'd like to make when I make this again, you know, bump up the anise seed a little bit more. Also, it'd be nice. I didn't crush them. I just put them in whole. Mm-hmm. I put them at the end, like 10 minutes before before flame out. But and then also, I think it would be fun to toast the anise seed a little bit, too, mm-hmm. just to see what happens.
You get more anise from that. With that, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back in just a moment on Ferment About It, heritageradionetwork.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. In our industrial world, most wines have become brands, but the wines I love are so much more. Fine wine is a civilizing substance that connects us to nature. It cannot be stamped out in a factory. If you're listening to this great show, you probably eat different. I urge you to drink different too. Go deeper. Cane5.com.
Welcome back to Ferment About It.
Next. On heritageradionetwork.org.
The big little, baby. The big little. So why did people make little beers? Kyler.
I guess I brought this up during the break. I guess the main reason for table beers, as I understand it, was in the Dark Ages, a long time ago, when water wasn't necessarily safe to drink. Beer was safer to drink, usually because they boiled it, and typically boiled it for long time, so they would almost always have some sort of alcoholic beverage on the table that was safer to drink than water. And I think that's my interpretation of why table beers. There's also the saisons, the original saisons, which I'm working on a table saison recipe around 3%. It's a traditional saison that they would give mm-hmm. to the workers in the fields to not inebriate them too much, so that they could still perform their work, but still quenching and still not as dangerous as the water they could possibly drink.
And personally, as a table beer, I mean, there are pairings for everything, but sometimes I just want something that's going to get me through breakfast, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Beer is not just a breakfast drink.
All right, Jamie, so you brought two table beers that you have recently brewed. So what's the first one?
The first one in the small bottle. This is the one you guys had before. This was an attempt at a table beer by which I was thinking about something I wanted to drink while I ate dinner. So it doesn't really correspond to the super, super low alcohol theme. That was just sort of kind of a shot in the dark at making something with predominantly European ingredients. I used a Kolsch yeast. I put a little flake dry in it for body. I mashed high and just put like a bunch of like some German crystal and some dark Munich just to bring out like a bunch of malty flavors. And I hopped it not high, but like enough to give it, you know, some bite so that it helps, you know, with the food mm-hmm. pairing and everything. And I think it worked out pretty well. It came in about 4.4. I plan to do another one and try to get it around 3. For a first attempt, I thought it came out pretty good.
I think these are important things you're saying, like mashing high to get more body. When you're using this little malt for small beers, I mean, small beers in general, it's hard to get a good big flavored beer with low alcohol. It's such a high component of things, and finding the tricks and to get that,
yeah,
depending on where you want that balance.
Yeah, in my experience, Matching High has really been probably the most important thing to do, primarily because, like, you want to make sure the yeast attenuates fully and doesn't leave unfermented sugars where you're going to get, like, a sweet, warty taste.
Right.
So you mash high, you get a bunch of dextrins that aren't fermentable, so they add body and flavor without actually being sweet. And, you know, I think some yeasts are going to be more... cooperative as far as our mash temperature is concerned. Like, you probably would have trouble using the French Saison yeast to make a really small beer. I'm going to try it someday, but it just won't stop fermenting. But the ones I've tried, you know, you mash, like, 156, 158, something like that, and, you know, you can get a beer that started at, like, 1036, 1032 to stop at, like, 1011, and you still have, you know, a real good amount of body in there.
Lots of flavor and lots of, and not too much alcohol.
Speaking of, I talking about that table saison, I tried. I'm using the French saison just because it's less finicky. So you are correct; it does kind of chew through everything. So mash temperature wise, so the one technique that I found was to build in, you know, other body building components like flaked oats, rye, stuff like that. A lot of stuff like that. I personally really like golden naked oats. Put those in not all of my beers, but a lot of them. Especially my bitter, just adds kind of like a big, silky, chewy mouth feel, you know, the more you use. And that helps, especially since the French Saison seems to, you know, chew through everything and finish at, you know, near one, no matter where it starts.
So what proportion of flaked grains are you using?
I haven't quite perfected it yet. I think it still is getting a little too dry, but I would say around 10% sometimes. I first noticed, or I first became aware of this issue when I did my first 100% Brettanomyces fermentation, which will ultimately chew through everything similar to French Saison, which makes me ultimately wonder if French Saison may not be some sort of mutant Brett strain. But I think it was Chad Jacobson. I read an article in BYO or Zymergy, and he talked about how you have to have something like flaked wheat, flaked rye. He suggested golden naked oats, which I was like, yep, that's one of my favorites. So I think I had close to 10% in like a blonde ale that I did, and it just leaves a lot of body, but you still get that dry, crisp taste that you know you love in Saisons or in any good beer, really. So, yeah.
Cool.
I like that.
I like flaked oats a lot, actually. I've been using that, and I made a bunch of bitters and things. And I've tried maybe some of them only once, but you have, you know, flaked wheat, flaked oats, flaked barley, and oats is definitely my favorite so far.
Yeah, definitely.
For the same reasons, just because it has the nice... It has, like, a silkiness to it, right? Yeah. That you don't really get from the other
and
ones.
It's got... my personal favorite. I'm gonna give a shout out to Simpsons Golden Naked Oats. What? I don't get paid
Simpsons.
By them, but they're a UK maltster.
I get Simpsons.
It gives this, so it gives a great mouthfeel, which is, you know, double bonus. And then it also gives it's kind of like a berry, nutty, kind of sweet flavor also that you can't really put your finger on unless you know that you use that. So it's just really nice. I really like it. I use it in my wit, which I brought, use it in my bitter, pretty much anything that can have it in it, I'll put it in. It's my secret weapon.
Not so secret anymore. So. Coming soon to 508.
So, Jamie, what other beer? So this is truly a beer under 3%.
This is an actual table beer. This one actually was sort of the second generation of a beer I brewed for a friend of mine who had a baby a couple months ago. And she wanted like a, you know, breastfeeding kind of safe to drink. Low alcohol beer. So this one is even better.
Like the scotch. Yeah,
yeah. She had some last night and thought it was really good. So this one actually uses, it's like maybe 7% Caraviana, 7% flaked wheat, 50% Maris Otter, and whatever the rest is, 30% Vienna malt. And it actually came out a little hoppier than I wanted. Not that I wanted than I planned, but I really like it. And I use the Belgian wheat yeast, which it's not the wit beer yeast, but I think it's marketed as a wit.
It's not the 3944.
It's 3942. And so I cold crashed it. I fermented about I checked it out for 6 days, and it was pretty done. I gave it another few days to clean up, then crashed it for like 2 or 3 days, because the first time I used this, the yeast was pretty reluctant to settle out, and I wanted to have it done. And I crashed it for 2 days and kegged it, and I brewed it 3 weeks ago, and I've been drinking it for a week already, and it's
holding up.
Yeah.
Nice. So,
yeah.
I think I want to change the name of this to Beer for Breastfeeders.
I forgot to mention that. I completely blanked on it.
That was what your Scotch ale was.
That
for,
was
right?
One of the main reasons for the Scotch ale was my wife and I just recently had a baby, and yeah, she wanted something. Actually, I wanted to give her something that was, because she was always like, oh, I'll just have a sip of yours at dinner. And I was like, I want her to have a full pint of beer. Not that I'm a weirdo or malicious in any way. I was right. Just like, I know she loves beer, but she's, you know, being very, very cautious, but. Yeah, that was one of the reasons, besides it also being a challenge, but, yeah.
Guinness is a relatively low alcohol beer, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of claims that, you know, Guinness is good for people who breastfeed. Have you found that true for your wife?
I haven't. She does. Allison, my wife, and give shout out to her, Allison and Aria. Not my two wives, it's Allison. Allison, my wife, and Aria, my daughter. she really loves stouts and actually loves milk stouts. And so, of course, the very first logical jump that any slight pervert would say would be the mother's milk stout. Right. It was always a joke between our friends and stuff, but I went the Scottish ale route. But I don't know. We don't drink a lot of Guinness. It's a lot better on draft, and we don't frequent bars too much anymore.
I concur.
Yeah.
I think, though, a sweet milk stout would be pretty doable to do an under 3%.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because it's instantly lactose is an unfermentable sugar for yeast, and it's an instant bodybuilder. Use that term again. You know, I've been hitting the gym a little bit. So.
Looking good.
An instant
bodybuilder. You got a body for radio, my friend. Looking good.
Instant, you know, it leaves behind a lot of fermentable sugar, or unfermentable sugar, so a lot of body, a lot of, you know, residual sweetness. But it's not really a sweetness, it's just kind of a mouthfeel, big mouthfeel. If you've ever had, my favorite and Allison's favorite is Left Hand Milk Stout.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really great beer.
Yeah,
it's delicious. Like a dessert in a glass.
So this is lovely, and you're getting most, I think most of the flavors are and aromas derived from the yeast, I would say, like you said.
Yeah. Actually, the other thing that I did with this one, I took like maybe a half gallon, 3/4 gallon of the first runnings, and I boiled down to about a third of the volume. Mm-hmm. So I didn't turn into a syrup, but I did boil it in a different pot till it got like a nice like dark amber color. And then I just added that back, and I tasted it after the boil, and I felt like it had a depth that I hadn't tasted in the previous beer, even though the previous beer was like bigger than this one. So,
I just read about that technique when in researching what to do for a Scotch ale. Actually, mm-hmm. a lot of people do that for their Scotch ales. They'll do that instead of boiling for a really, really long time, the whole batch, they'll take some out and kind of concentrate that and throw it back in. But that worked really well. It's really. That's a good tip.
So I had a quick question. You said, I just caught the tail end of it, but you said it sounded like you had mixed a bunch of base malts. Is that right? I heard Vienna, Munich, and Marisada something like that?
Yeah, the first time I made this, I actually got to the homebrew store at like 6 o'clock on a Saturday night, and they were sold out of the things I wanted. Okay. So I kind of pieced together a recipe, and it turned out really well, so I kind of wanted to simplify it, but also use a diversity of different base malts. Nice. So I don't tend to use a lot of crystal and stuff, or I usually almost never use stuff like aromatic and, you know, biscuit malt. I use two different base malts, a little bit of Caribbeana, and a flaked grain for this one.
Yeah.
Cool.
The flaked grain.
Yeah, it's really nice.
This has a lot of depth, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot going on for a... Wait, what did this come out at?
2.74.
That's crazy. There's a lot of flavor in this beer. Mm-hmm. I really like it.
So that's our challenge to all of you out there, is to make some table beers. We have another, Nick Harbor, who's also a member of the Guild and made a table beer, is out of town. So he was unable to join us, but he might be joining us in the next week or two to talk about his. And then I'm going to continue doing some 1 gallon batches and making some 2.5% beers.
And we would like to have a big party at our house where nobody gets drunk.
There's just a really long line for the bathroom.
Yeah, right.
But there's exactly. And a bunch of pregnant women.
or breastfeeding women.
Yes.
All right, so we want to remind you that heritageradionetwork.org is a not-for-profit station. So they are supported in part by your membership. You can get membership starts at $60, and it gets you discounts like 5% off at Bitter and Esther's and Brooklyn Homebrew, as well as a dollar off beers at Jimmy's Number 43. So you could support our show and all the other great shows that are on this station.
Great thanks to our guests, Jamie Stafford Hill of the New York City Homebrewers Guild, Kyler Service of Hate's Brewing, and the Brooklyn Bruisers.
Yep. We'll be back next week with Angela Davis talking about milk kefir.
Fermenting about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.